Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be with you on the afternoon drive as we talk both local and national sports. And there's plenty to get into today, to say the least. In fact, it is the final day of the regular season for the NBA. The 82-game trek will come to a close. And for the Utah Jazz, there is plenty to play for tonight as they are on the road to take on the Portland Trail Blazers. This contest will actually air on ESPN, but you will be able to listen to the live broadcast right here on KOAL. If the Jazz get a win, they are the number 3 seed going into the Western Conference. Now, who do they play? That is still up for question. Odds are it's going to be Oklahoma City, I think, one way or the other. The Thunder will actually play host to the Memphis Grizzlies tonight, but this is the way it's shaping up. A win for OKC and a loss for San Antonio means that OKC is going to move up into that number 6 spot. A lot of that, though, depends on New Orleans and San Antonio as well. Those two teams play one another, so one of them is guaranteed to lose. A lot of questions. We will talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But before we do, let's look at the schedule in the NBA this evening. We get Brooklyn on the road to take on the Boston Celtics. We get the Knicks traveling to meet the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Heat will play host to the Raptors. Washington at Orlando. Milwaukee at Philadelphia. The Bulls will welcome in Detroit. Denver at Minnesota. That game right there is the biggest game of the night. The winner of that game will qualify for the playoffs. The loser will be on the outside looking in. And we get San Antonio and New Orleans, and then we get Memphis and OKC. All of those games are in the 6 o'clock hour. To close it out tonight, we get the Lakers and the Clippers at 8:30, as well as the Jazz and the Blazers, and then the Rockets and the Kings. So some big NBA basketball coming up tonight. Should be very, very entertaining. And again, it's kind of like a pre-playoff matchup, getting Denver going toe-to-toe with Minnesota. I can't believe that the Timberwolves are on the verge of not making the playoffs. Kind of a toxic situation all the way around in Minnesota right now. And again, we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Let's take a look at the scoreboard in Major League Baseball, because we had a couple of thrillers earlier today. The Atlanta Braves went into extra innings with the Washington Nationals, and Atlanta comes out on top in 12 innings by a final score of 5-3. Washington now 500 at 6-6. In this game, Ozzie Albies continues to light it up for the Atlanta Braves. He goes yard early on in the contest, but it took 12 innings to decide the winner. The Braves finally get it done. Other final scores from earlier today: the Twins top the World Series champion Houston Astros 9-8. The Brewers close out the Cardinals 3-2, something the Brewers were unable to do last night. They couldn't hold off the Cardinals. Barnes blows the save, and the Cardinals picked up the win. But today, the Brewers get revenge in a 3-2 victory. The White Sox defeated the Rays 2-1. It was Seattle over the Royals by a final score of 4-2. And we still have plenty of Major League action to come. In fact, right now, we have the Rockies and the Padres going toe-to-toe. The Rockies up 6-4 right now on San Diego. A little bit of extracurricular activity in this contest. Last night, Manuel Margot, leadoff man outfielder for the Padres, took a 95-mile-an-hour fastball to the ribs. You knew that wouldn't go unanswered today. The Padres and the Rockies, they get into it just a bit, but that one just about to close up. The Rockies up 6-4 as we go to the eighth inning. Still to come tonight, the Dodgers will take on the Athletics. Start time for that game is set for 8:10. Last night, the Dodgers shut out the A's 4-0, and that'll be the second and final game of a quick interleague matchup. 5 o'clock hour tonight, we get the Blue Jays and the Orioles. The Reds will take on the Phillies. The Yankees will look to bounce back from a devastating loss to the Red Sox. Boston is playing so well right now. They've won 9 out of 10 games to open up the season. The Yankees, 5-6. The nightmare for Giancarlo Stanton continues. David Price is going to be on the mound tonight for the Red Sox. Tanaka for the Yankees. Also in the 5 o'clock hour, we get the Mets and the Marlins. 6 o'clock tonight, the Angels will take on the Rangers. And then we get the Pirates and the Cubs. John Lester, who has struggled a little bit out of the gate, will take the mound tonight for the Chicago Cubs. We got plenty to get into on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Again, we're going to talk plenty of local and, of course, national in the world of the NBA. Coming up next segment, we're going to be joined by Harvey Howard. He is the owner of the Desert Thunder Raceway. They will actually open up the gates this weekend. They have a 4-set race schedule. It's going to be 2 in April. We'll have another one in May and then close out the season in September. Harvey Howard's going to join us and set the stage for this weekend. And, of course, we'll talk more Utah Jazz basketball. And if we have time, we'll dibble in the NBA as well. All that and more coming up here on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we begin on the high school soccer field where yesterday the Carbon Dinos pulled out a 3-2 victory over the Providence Hall Patriots in Region 14 play at home. Carbon trailed 1-0 at the end of the first half, but outscored Providence Hall 2-1 in the final half to force overtime, where the Dinos found the back of the net as Marcelo Munez put in the game-winning goal. Now, Tuesday's victory was an important one for the Dinos. With only 4 games remaining in the regular season, Carbon is now within 2 points of Delta for first place in Region 14. Carbon now sits 5-1-1 in league action, while Delta sits at the top at 6-1-0. Now, the Dinos will resume the soccer season later on this week, Thursday, with a road trip to meet Macer Prep. Next week, Carbon will go toe-to-toe with ALA and also Delta before wrapping up the regular season on April 26th against JUAB. We stick with soccer, but we move over to Emory High, where yesterday the Spartans defeated the Richfield Wildcats 2-1, scoring both goals in the first half. Both of those goals were scored by Parker Sermon, who helped the Spartans continue what has been a brilliant stretch. They've now won 3 out of their last 4 games, and that one was a tie against North St. Pete. Emory right now is in contention to win a Region 15 crown. They'll continue the soccer season tomorrow as they play host to the North St. Pete Hawks. Start time for that game is set for 4 p.m. We move over to high school baseball, and yesterday the Emory Spartans defeated the Manti Templars 7-2 in a Region 15 tilt in Castledale. Emory improves to 3-4 in Region 15 play with a win. The Spartans got off to a hot start, scoring 2 runs in the first frame. They added 3 more in the third and 2 more in the sixth as they shut down the Templars in the final 4 frames to pick up the 7-2 win. In the victory, the Spartans were led by senior Easton Gordon. He finished with a team-best 2 RBIs. As a team, the Spartans accumulated 4 hits, 1 for Jesse Barnett, 1 for Colton Wilson, Cade Brazier, and also Coda Alton. Again, Emory is now 3-4 in region play, while Manti remains winless. The Spartans will once again take the field against the Manti Templars on Friday to wrap up the season set. But today, it'll be a non-league tilt on the road against American Leadership Academy. Start time for that contest is set for 3:30 p.m. We move over to softball, and yesterday, the Emory Lady Spartans continued the season as they went toe-to-toe with the Manti Templars, falling 16-1. This contest took place at home in Castledale. Manti scored 3 runs in the first inning, 10 in the second, and 3 in the third. Emory's lone run came in the second inning. The loss marks the 3rd consecutive for Emory. They suffered a 16-0 loss to San Juan, followed by a 9-7 loss to San Juan last week. The Spartans will have an opportunity to get back on the winning track Friday as they travel on the road to meet the Templars, who are currently at the top of the Region 15 division. And we take a look at Carbon High School softball, where the Lady Dinos continue to play lights out as they defeated the JUAB Wasps 17-11 in a monumental region tilt. The Lady Dinos scored 7 runs in the first inning, and that proved to be the difference throughout the game as they played fairly even with JUAB from that point on. Brooke Mooseman got the win on the mound. She pitched 5 innings, giving up 9 earned runs, but also striking out 1. At the plate, it was Kelsey Sorensen who finished with 3 hits, while Caitlin Cripps followed suit. She finished with 3 hits and 5 RBIs. Callie Fawcett accumulated a team-best 7 RBIs and also went yard 1 time in this contest. Now, as far as the Region 14 standings go, Carbon is now taken first place in the division. They hold a record of 4-1, while JUAB is tied with Union at 3-1. Now, Carbon will again take the field on Thursday at home against North Sevier. That's a non-region contest, and the game is scheduled to begin at 3:30 p.m. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com, as well as the weekly high school sports schedules. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Hey, this is Eric Amarola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports on AM 750.
Let's talk some auto racing here on Drive Time Sports. Local sports segment today, Desert Thunder Raceway. Coming up this Friday and Saturday, they're going to open up the gates for the very first time this season. An extended schedule, four sets of races, and the season's actually going to get off and rolling a little bit earlier than it has in the past. Joining us right now to talk a bit about that and more, we have Desert Thunder Raceway track owner Harvey Howard over the phone right now. Harvey, thank you for taking out the time today. It's good to hear from you again.
Thank you for having me. It's been a long winter, and we're going to get started early, kind of like we did back in the good old days.
Definitely no complaints. I know that people are obviously excited for the season opener, which will be this Friday and Saturday. Before we talk about this event and what's in store for us this weekend, we can look at the 2018 schedule in general. You mentioned a little bit of an earlier start, so we'll get races this Friday and Saturday, once again on April 28th and 29th, and then again in May, and then you're going to take 2 months off before the Castle Country Clash in September. So that's what the 2018 schedule looks like.
Right, yeah, we're going to run one more weekend, two more races than we did last year, and everybody's excited about that, too. So everything's looking good, and there's a lot of racing, not only here, but around the region. And that's one of the reasons we wanted to get started early this year. You may have to wear a coat the first race or something like that, but we're going to get the races in. We wanted to get started before everybody else, so everybody can come in here and see what we're about.
As far as the schedule itself goes, I'm sure it's kind of difficult to put that together because, again, you mentioned it, there's racing going on all over the place, and I know a lot of the guys, especially the local drivers that we will see this weekend, they travel outside of the area as well. So does that kind of coincide with why we have two races here this month, one in May, and then we kind of have a long break? Is that kind of what goes into determining the schedule?
Yes, absolutely. The tracks that are around here are IMCA tracks, and you want to work back and forth so that the guys have the most opportunity to get their state, local, and regional, national points. And the best way to do that is have a race somewhere every single weekend, and that's what we've done this year. There will be a race from this Friday. There will be a race every weekend somewhere in within a couple hundred miles of us every single weekend up until the end of September at the Castle Country Clash, and we'll finish up here.
Well, Harvey, let's talk about what we have in store this weekend. And again, it's all the classes that I know that people are so accustomed to seeing out here. We get the modifieds, the stocks, the hobbies, the minis, and it's going to be on the dirt track. I mean, that's what we have in store, right, Friday and Saturday?
Yes. The one change that we are looking at this year is the stock cars are going to be finishing up their last year of turning over to IMCA stock cars. IMCA stock cars are awesome race cars. Everybody needs to go out there and look at them. The other thing that we're doing is we're starting to roll over to our IMCA hobby stocks. Now, all of the old hobby stocks or pure stocks that have run here before, they're all legal for IMCA, but we're moving things forward into IMCA because IMCA has a better sanction program, better insurance. The whole bit is better with IMCA, so we're actually moving our hobby stocks into that group as well. So there'll be IMCA modifieds, IMCA sport mods, Southern and Northern, the IMCA stock cars, IMCA hobby stocks, and then we'll also run the mini stocks. So there's going to be a full gamut of racers. Now, this Saturday, one thing that's going to happen this Saturday that may not happen again this year is we're going to have the dwarf cars here. So we're going to have a bunch of dwarf cars come from over in Vernal, so they'll be there this weekend too. So a bunch of race cars. We're going to send it off with a bang this year. It started off with a bang, I should say.
Definitely looking forward to it. Again, joining us right now over the phone is Harvey Howard as we talk about the opening weekend of the Desert Thunder Raceway. That'll be this Friday and Saturday. Of course, the Desert Thunder Raceway is out on Airport Road. With that being said, let's talk about some of the local drivers, Harvey, the names that people will definitely remember as they go out to the races this weekend. Who are some of the locals that'll be participating?
Yep, Nikki Stubbings is going to be back in the modifieds. Always love seeing Mickey. Just a great driver, great sportsman, great to be around. Wyatt Howard, he's got his new car ready to go on practice day. He looked really good. Sean Parrish, he's got his new car ready to go, new stock car. And Sean looked really good. The Grays will be back. Scott Grays actually moved up into a modified. So that's going to be interesting to see how he does against the modified. Steve Gray will be back. We got all kinds of local drivers, and that's one thing that I've been happy with the last couple of years is we've started building our local drivers up again. We got locals like Brett Housekeeper and a few of the others that are here that are from our area, coming up from the pure stocks, and it's going to be interesting to watch them. I've always liked that when we get a few of the newer local guys.
As far as talking about these local drivers, you mentioned Mick Stubbings. I got to ask you about Mick. He's kind of like the ageless wonder, right? I mean, I'm not saying that this is a young man's sport, but at the same time, Mick has been around for a very long time. I always get a lot of joy in interviewing Mick and getting him here on the show because the guy's got stories for days. He's been around racing his entire life.
Right, and it's nice to be able to sit and talk with him and learn him. But, he is one heck of a race car driver, and I honestly don't think he slowed down any. Last year he won an IMCA event over in Millard County and was second place a couple times, and he's an excellent driver and just somebody that you want to be around and you want your kids around. He has been very enjoyable having here.
Harvey, let's talk about the logistics of Friday and Saturday night as far as the tickets and how the start time and as far as what goes on with the pits, because I know you guys make that all very accessible for the fans as well. So give me the logistics of Friday and Saturday night.
Okay, first thing that will happen is the pits will open. They'll probably be open by around noon. You'll be able to start getting pit passes about 3 or 4 o'clock. Pit pass is $15. Anybody can get a pit pass if you're a spectator or with somebody that's racing, you can get a pit pass. So they're $15. And if you got younger kids, we charge less for the younger kids depending on how young they are in the pits. But the spectator gates will be open by around 4:30 or 5 o'clock. The adults Friday night are $8. Saturday night's $10. Kids 6 to 12 Friday night is $5 and $6 Saturday night. Under 6 years of age or 6 and under are free. So it's easy to bring the kids and the family out. Our family pass is $25, and that includes two adults and three kids up to the age of 16. When we run to the family pass, we raise the age limit just a little bit. So the family pass does include two adults and three kids up to 16, and that's $25. The races should get underway by 6 or 6:30 both nights. So hope everybody can make it out. We've got concessions that'll be available out there. They're being provided by Jana at Sherald's. So you're going to get good food while you're there. So
How's the track look right now, Harvey?
Track's in great shape. The track's actually, we've been doing quite a bit of work on it. The track is actually wider right now than what it has ever been. We narrowed it up a little bit because we had some water problems last year, but that's all been corrected, and the track is actually wider than it's ever been. We're the narrowest part of the track is about 80 feet wide. The widest part of the track is about 100 feet wide. So, people are going to see a 3 and 4 wide racing all night, both nights. It's going to be exciting.
And 4 wide racing is not something you traditionally see on a dirt track either, is it?
No. 2 wide makes the racers happy. 3 and 4 wide makes it so that you can basically go anywhere. There's no excuses if you didn't make it to the front. If you get a car and you can pass, 3 and 4 wide racing is great, and that's why we'll have, we've got guys coming in from Idaho, Colorado, Wyoming, Nevada, New Mexico this weekend, and that's the reason. They love the track. They love to come and race, and they know that we'll give them a fair deal when they get here. So I'm looking forward to seeing them guys.
Harvey, it's always a pleasure to get you on the air. Thank you again for taking out the time. We'll see you at the track this weekend. Thank you.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Again, that's Harvey Howard, Desert Thunder Raceway track owner, talking about opening weekend this Friday and Saturday, Desert Thunder Raceway on Airport Road. Make sure you get out and support the local auto racing scene. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we're going to flip over, talk some NBA basketball. Last night, the Utah Jazz dominate the Golden State Warriors, and now that sets up a matchup with the Portland Trail Blazers. Win, and Utah is the 3 seed. We'll talk about that when we return here on Drive Time Sports.
With the 6th pick in the 2014 NBA Draft, the Boston Celtics select Marcus Smart.
This is Marcus Smart from the Boston Celtics, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Marcus Smart, what a spin move and a finish to handle Marcus Smart, whether he's outside or inside the paint.
Last night of the NBA regular season, can't believe how fast this season has gone by, but now we're looking at different playoff scenarios, and I know I said this a million times yesterday, but despite the fact that the Jazz were 9 games under 500 on January 22nd, a win tonight over Portland here on KOAL means that they enter the playoffs a number 3 seed. Joining us right now over the phone to talk a bit about that, we have Jameson Welsh of BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. Jameson, it's odd to say. I mean, this was a team that was like 3-12 on the road to start the season. The Jazz have played better basketball than I think anyone in the NBA over the past 3 or 4 months. And here we are tonight. They win. They're a 3 seed in the Western Conference. That is improbable, isn't it?
Quinn Snyder should be coach of the year. Because here's the thing. Whenever you lose an all-star out West, it's very hard to recover from that. Extremely hard. Very few teams do. Whenever a team loses an all-star out West, usually that next season is really rough. There's usually a drop-off in their record and their performance and whatnot. They lost an all-star out West and got better, you can argue. And with that being said, they drafted well. The signings they made turned out to be okay for the situation. And next thing you know, you have a team that can really play with pretty much anyone out West. So if you look at Utah Jazz, I think if you look at them, this is probably the biggest surprise in the league because no one had them losing Gordon Hayward and turn the team over to Rudy Gobert, having him get hurt for a third of the year or a little bit less than a third of the year. And then next you know, they're impossible to be the 3rd or 4th seed. Nah, man, if I had told this in October when we had a preview of the season and I told you, hey, the Jazz gonna get 3rd or 4th seed out West, you probably would have drug tested me. But now here we are, 8 months later, and, they have a chance to be a pretty tough out of the playoffs, which is pretty remarkable.
Well, I we had this conversation yesterday. At the beginning of the year, I thought the Jazz could win 50 games, but I was completely off on how they could win 50 because I thought that Rodney Hood would have to take that next step and become the man in Utah. Nobody saw Donovan Mitchell doing what he is doing. I thought that if Rodney Hood could become the guy that I expected him to become when the Jazz drafted him out of Duke, I thought that this could be a fairly potent team. And again, it goes back to Gordon Hayward not being worth $170 million. Like, I stand by that. I said he wasn't worth $170 million at the time. I don't think he's worth $170 million now. And I think this is, you know, look, the proof is in the pudding. But with that being said, Jameson, just things had to play right for the Jazz to get to this point. It's been the play of Joe Ingles. It's been the play of Derek Favors and Ricky Rubio. I know he has outshined his contract as well. The Jazz have had, I don't want to say unlikely characters in this whole role, but everything has come together, and that is why Quinn Snyder is head coach of the year. No question.
Yeah, I mean, everything's based on expectation. You know, the Raptors, they still have two All-Stars on their roster. You know, the Celtics at the time had two All-Stars on their roster. You know, those two, you know, Popovich, you know, he has Marcus Aldridge, who's an All-Star. They have their foundation there. But just, you know, just expectations. I think, like everything else, everything's based off of expectations, whether you perform well or underperform or overperform. And the Jazz had very low expectations. Most people had them as a lottery team. And now here they are, a legit contender out West. Don't know how far they can go, but they can definitely give someone a really difficult series or two out West. They can make things difficult for Houston or Golden State in the next round, if that's who they draw. So with that being said, yeah, this is a successful situation. This is a team that's on the rise. You have a top, probably, well, you're definitely a top five center for sure, probably even higher than that. And you have one of the youngest, one of the best young talents in the league in Donovan Mitchell, who should be Rookie of the Year, even though that award really doesn't mean a whole lot. But he should be Rookie of the Year, you know, because he is a first-year guy playing in the NBA. So, yeah, the Jazz are a pretty good future. And also, we all thought they were kind of crazy when they dropped Rodney Hood. Well, they dropped Rodney Hood and got better. Tells you all you need to know about him and their front office.
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. To close out the regular season, they've now won six consecutive games. Portland has lost four straight. It seemed like 2 weeks ago, Portland was a lock to be the number three seed. In fact, you and I here on this show had a conversation about Damian Lillard and how underrated this guy is. Boy, what a difference a couple of weeks make, because, again, Portland, 48-33, losers of their last four. Now they have to take on the Jazz, one of the hottest teams in the NBA. How important is it, do you believe, for the Jazz to come out as the number three seed in the Western Conference?
If they can, it's great. I mean, here's the thing. As long as you have home court advantage in the first round, that's what matters. It's going to be a tough game back-to-back. Portland is a very tough team, a motivated team that, you know, the Portland's as well in the same situation. They're trying to get that third seed to, you know, they're trying to lock up home court as well for the first round. They play better at home than they do away. Same thing with the Jazz, even though they've had, you know, they had a really weird year this year, but they do play, their home court advantage is better than them being on the road. So both teams have different advantages, but they want to stay home for that first round. They don't want anything, because the way this is like the baseball season when you have the second wild card and you got a bunch of tiebreakers, you got one game playoffs. This is like the end of baseball season without the one game playoffs. You have so many different things going on, so many different scenarios. No one knows what's going to happen for another 2 or 3 hours, but it's very exciting. It actually draws a lot of attention to the league, and we actually have a play-in game tonight in the same division that the Jazz and the Blazers are in, which is pretty fun.
Right, right. And again, we're being joined right now by Jameson Welsh of BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. You mentioned the play-in game. I can't believe that Minnesota is sitting in this position. At the beginning of the year, I had such high expectations for this Timberwolf team. You look, I mean, they've played fairly decent over the last 10 games of the season, but with that being said, they're still 46-35 at a loss tonight. They're on the outside looking in. There's no reason why this Minnesota Timberwolf team should not be in the top eight of the Western Conference. I don't care if it's going to take 47, 48, 49, 50 wins to get there. Jameson, this is a team that is top eight talent-wise in the Western Conference, and if they don't win tonight, they're on the outside looking in.
Well, here's the thing. It's not that they're talent-wise. They've invested a lot into this roster. They have, you know, they've traded draft picks. They've gotten all, they have two All-Stars on the roster, a third guy who has a $150 million contract. They have a coach slash GM that's getting paid eight figures a year. You better figure it out. It's a must win. If they don't win tonight, they have to make massive changes. And I think Tom Thibodeau might be one of the most overrated coaches in the league based off of what he's getting paid to do and what he's accomplished as a head coach. Lately, it's been very rough. He's not a defensive. The whole defensive-minded situation isn't really there. It's a really tough selling point because they haven't been a good defensive team. But they really haven't. So you look at their team, look at their situation, I really don't see a well-coached team. I see a team that's tired, that's overused, and simply is underperforming. You have these three players, and I'm not as big of a Wiggins fan as some people are. I think he's a solid player. I don't think he's a great player. He's definitely not worth the money he's getting paid. However, he should be producing at a higher level than he currently is. And I think Thibodeau is a part of that. Not the whole situation, but he's a part of that. They should not be playing a play-in game tonight. They should be resting starters, getting ready for Saturday or Sunday. They have no business, even with the injury to Jimmy Butler, they have no business being in this situation. If they lose, I think somebody has to go. It's one of those situations.
Did the signing of Derrick Rose hurt this team?
They had issues before Derrick Rose. Again, when you're playing starters 40-plus minutes a night, you don't need to. Like, their bench was decent. Like, Gorgui Dieng is probably one of the better backup centers in the league. Like, he's serviceable. Like, he's not going to kill you. Tyus Jones is one of the better young point guards in the game. Like, he's solid. He's not going to kill you. You can sub them out. Like, you brought in Jamal Crawford. You can play him more. Like, he can play 20 minutes a night. He's not going to kill you playing 20 minutes a night. So, like, the mismanagement of the personnel has been alarming, and it's an issue that we all had questions when Tibbs first got this job. It was like, hey, has he learned from Chicago? And obviously not. There's games where they've been up 20 in the fourth quarter with 4 minutes to go, and this guy just stood out there, and everyone's like, hey, the other team has their backups and reserve backups in. Why do you have starters in? And it's the same thing. And unfortunately, he's going to have to learn that it doesn't work. Because even, let's say Minnesota gets in, they get the 7th or 8th seed. They're not winning versus either of those teams.
No.
Now, they might give the Warriors a series, but they're not beating the Warriors. They're not beating the Rockets. They're not. Like, they're not. Now, if they were better coached and better prepared, they have the talent to make anything a series, but they're not. They're not. Their season's going to be over within 10 to 12 days.
You mentioned Tom Thibodeau being one of the more overrated coaches in the NBA. I know Doc Rivers won an NBA championship. Who's more overrated, Doc Rivers or Tom Thibodeau?
Well, at least with Doc, at least there's some track record of some good years. Some weird situations came about. With Thibodeau, he hasn't learned from his flaws, and I think that's a really bad situation. Whenever a coach or a player doesn't learn from their flaws or mistakes from a previous situation, it's very difficult for me to say, hey, that's a good coach, that's the guy that guy should play with, or that's the team where guys should go. It's the same old thing with this guy. Like, why are you playing your guy? Like, they've had some very shaky losses down the stretch, and guys have come out and said, like, hey, we're tired. Like, we're just straight out tired. Not that we're not good enough, just tired. And as a coach, you got to know, especially Thibodeau's been in this league over 20 years, maybe even 30 years. He knows how what players need rest and whatnot. He just does this every stop. And honestly, I think it's a drawback. I don't think they're going to be able to acquire certain players going forward unless it's through the draft, because guys don't want to be playing 40-plus minutes tonight if they don't have to. That's ridiculous. But tonight, hey, man, everybody might play 48-plus tonight because it's the win or go home.
There is a scenario where the San Antonio Spurs could actually fold to the 8 seed tonight. If the Jazz win, the Pelicans win, and the Nuggets win, guess what? The Spurs are the 8 seed. If the Blazers win and the Pelicans win and the Nuggets win, the Spurs are the 8 seed. A little bit of a shocker, but one of the things that stands out, and if you don't pay attention to the standings or you don't have a real close eye watch on the NBA, you probably wouldn't know this. San Antonio is 14-26 on the road. Minnesota is 17-24 on the road, and the Nuggets are 15-25 on the road. Not a coincidence that we're talking about two of these teams potentially not making the playoffs, and then another one of these teams potentially dropping all the way down to the 8th seed. It's that simple. You have to win on the road, and these are three teams that haven't been able to do it.
Well, the Spurs had other issues. The Spurs, their players not with them. I give the Spurs an excuse, right? For them to be in this position without their best player for pretty much most of the season, I can understand it. Hey, this is like pretty much a mulligan. I mean, no one expects them to win. If they get to a round, if they advance in the first round, great. If not, hey, we understand this is how these things go sometimes. It's unfortunate it happens, but you know what? I can live with them being the way they are this year. They have an excuse. Kawhi Leonard either doesn't want to be there or he's hurt. Whatever it is, I can live with that. But, man, the 8th seed is kind of interesting. But put it this way, Jordan, what other team could lose their best player for 70-plus games and still figure out a way to make it out?
That's a good point. That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, it's incredible. Like, I mean, they're relying on Rudy Gay, 40-year-old Manu Ginobili, a very young DeJounte Murray, who I like a lot. And a lot of scrap. I mean, Kyle Anderson's playing major minutes for them. They're just a very weird and, you know, they're a bunch that plays hard. They don't kill themselves with mistakes, especially at home. And they're going to find a way to execute. Now, they're not very good, so versus a talented team, like, okay, not OKC, but versus Golden State or Houston, they're going to struggle and have their issues. But for the most part, if they end up with playing New Orleans or the Jazz or OKC, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they won that series. It really wouldn't.
Right. No, I agree. And last question before I let you go, Jameson. Best matchup for the Utah Jazz in the opening round. Who would it be? Do you want to see him play New Orleans, San Antonio, Oklahoma City? Who's the best matchup?
New Orleans has the least amount of talent. Outside of Anthony Davis, no one really scares me on that roster. Drew Holiday is good, but he's not an all-star kind of guy. You know, whenever you're in a series, you don't want to have – you want to at least have – if you don't have the best player, that's fine, but you don't want to have, you know, the second or third best guy either. You want to have – if you don't have the best guy, you want to have the second, third best guy and go from there. Versus New Orleans, they would probably have the second and third best player. Versus OKC, that you can make an argument that they wouldn't have the first or second best player. So I would avoid OKC if possible. I would look for New Orleans, but the way Anthony Davis is playing, he's been a problem. So either way, I think the Jazz are going to be in for a good first-round series. I think they're going to be in for a long series. I don't see them sweeping or getting swept, so I think they're in for a fun ride.
Jameson Welsh, BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. Always look forward to the conversations. Thank you again. Enjoy the final night of the regular season, and I know we'll talk again soon.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always.
We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
I want to close out today's show by talking about Russell Westbrook. Has a chance to do something historical tonight. If he can grab 16 rebounds, he'll become the first player in NBA history to average a triple-double more than once. Can you believe that? For some reason, and I think it's probably because Oklahoma City had such high expectations at the beginning of the year, going out and getting Paul George, and then going out and getting Carmelo Anthony and Sam Presti, really doing everything he could to kind of give the hat tip to Russell Westbrook to tell him, look, we can build a team here. We can bring in elite talent. And then the expectations, they fall short. I mean, right now this team could be an 8 seed. With all that being said, Russell Westbrook has put together a pretty historical season. 25 points, 9.9 rebounds, and 10.1 assists. And so again, all he has to do is grab 16 rebounds tonight, and he averages a triple-double for the second consecutive season. He'll be the only player in NBA history to ever do that. I'm a huge Russell Westbrook fan. There's not another player in the league that I would rather spend my money right now to watch than Russell Westbrook. And I'll tell you why. I know what I'm going to get every single time I watch OKC play and Russell Westbrook is out on the court. I'm going to get a raw, savage, 110% effort out of the best point guard in the NBA. And that's what he is. He's the best point guard in the NBA. We can talk about Steph Curry, everything that Steph has been able to accomplish. I get it. People love Kyrie Irving. He was a closer in the NBA Finals. I get it. This guy's averaging a triple-double. And one of the things that really, really blows my mind is that people accuse him of padding stats, which is insane to me. Because if you could average 15 rebounds a game, you're going to average 15 rebounds a game, right? Like, that's a knock we have on bigs all the time. If DeAndre Jordan doesn't go out and grab 10 boards a game, we'd sit here and say, what in the world is going on? Russell Westbrook was addressed today by the media about, quote-unquote, padding his stats. Listen to this response.
A lot of people make jokes about, you know, whatever stat padding or going to get rebounds.
If people could get 20 rebounds every night, they would. If people could get 15 rebounds, they would. The people that's talking or saying whatever they need to say, they should try and do it and see how hard it is. Since everybody's so, you know, everybody wants to be talking, and, you know, I'm tired of hearing the same old rebound this, stealing rebound, all this. I take pride in what I do. Come out and play, and I get the ball faster than somebody else get to it. That's just what it is. If you don't want it, I'm going to get it. Simple as that.
Kudos to Russell Westbrook. 100% right. You go out and try to average 10 rebounds a game. There's a reason why not many players in the league average 10 rebounds a game. Because it's pretty difficult to do. It doesn't sound like a lot, right? It's pretty difficult to do. Take a look at the individuals that are averaging 10 rebounds a game in the NBA. There's 10 of them, not counting Russell Westbrook. 10 of them. It's pretty difficult to do. Kevin Love plays power forward slash center, doesn't average 10 rebounds a game. Steven Adams, center on the Thunder, doesn't average 10 rebounds a game. LeBron James, greatest player in the world, does not average 10 rebounds a game, and LeBron James will play three to four positions in a contest, does not average 10 rebounds a game. It's pretty difficult to do. Ben Simmons, who's a point guard, averages 8 rebounds a game. I think Ben Simmons could, in fact, average a triple-double at some point in time in a season. I think he's that special of a talent. But it's hard to do. And I think the reason why Russell Westbrook catches slack, for one, he doesn't play the fraternity game. He's not a millennial. Doesn't play the fraternity game. Does not have the attitude of, I'm going to jump ship to go to where it's easiest. Doesn't have that attitude. At least he hasn't presented that attitude. This guy has stayed in OKC, re-upped, and does things his way. So he's not perceived like the Kyries and the LeBrons and the KDs of the world. He's different. He's cut from a cloth of 80s talent. He's one of a handful of players in the NBA right now whose skill set would translate to the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, and where we're at today. Only a handful of guys, I believe, in the NBA possess that ability. Russell Westbrook is one of them. And I almost feel that he's falling victim to his own greatness. It's kind of like Magic Johnson. You know, when you have the conversation of who the greatest point guard of all time is, it's Magic Johnson, hands down. I don't care that Magic Johnson was 6'9", the guy played point guard. Don't care that Magic Johnson could play all five positions on the court, he played point guard. But because he's so versatile, we have to bring up the argument of who the greatest true point guard of all time is. By definition of a point guard, Magic Johnson was it. And it's the same with Russell Westbrook. And I feel like this guy is falling victim to his own greatness. He's about to average a triple-double for the second consecutive season. That's insane. It was a unicorn season beforehand. That was why we talked about Oscar Robertson the way we did, right? Because he did something that was just astronomical. We'd never see that again. A triple-double? For as great as LeBron James is, he's never averaged a triple-double throughout the entire season. But really, the media is going to accuse Russell Westbrook of padding his stats? Give me a break. Because this guy's not a media darling? That's nuts. Kudos to Russell Westbrook for firing back today. That guy's the best point guard in the NBA. Hands down. Does everything that you would want a player to do. Rebounds, scores, distributes. And he does it with raw savagery. Guy's an animal out on the court. And again, there's not another player in the NBA I would rather pay to watch play than Russell Westbrook, because you know what you're going to get out of him every single night on the court. That's going to do it for us on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Definitely have to thank Harvey Howard and, of course, Jameson Welsh for taking out the time to join us. Tomorrow, we're going to talk USU Eastern softball coach Brittany Richens will join us on the show. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Michael Medved is coming up next here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Be safe. I am out.